a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
My name is Bernie Hunniff. I'm a state representative from Yankton in District 18, the Democratic leader in the House, joined by Senator Jason Frerichs, my good friend and fellow leader in the Senate. And we appreciate the good turnout from the media here, and I understand around the state we've got some people on the line already. So we'll try to keep our introductory comments brief and get right to the callers. We're finishing the second week of a 9-week legislative session, so we're moving right along already. I think it's been a great atmosphere so far. I think we've continued the good spirit and camaraderie that we had last session. So that's been a very, very positive development. Lots of citizens have already been out here in Pierre. We began with the rural water folks were here. The rural electric folks have been here. People have been out here talking about roads and bridges and infrastructure. All areas where we work together as a state, where we recognize a public need, a common interest, and work together to move South Dakota forward. Last night, we had a really wonderful banquet. The annual tourism banquet was here, and folks from the tourism industry all across South Dakota gathered. I don't know, it must have been 500-600 people at the Ramcota. It was a wonderful thing, and they reported good numbers. Tourism is growing in South Dakota. I think one particular chart showed that we get a 5-to-1 investment on monies we spend in tourism. So it's a great public-private partnership for South Dakotans. 5-to-1, that's pretty impressive. I think probably the biggest public policy decision we face in South Dakota in this 2014 session is whether or not we should expand health care coverage for the poor South Dakotans. And that 5-to-1 return on investment is pretty impressive for tourism. If we expand health care coverage for the poor South Dakotans in partnership with the Affordable Care Act, the way I figure it, it's 160-to-1 return, 160-to-1. So that's an amazing statistic. And it's, just on monetary terms alone, it's just an investment that I don't know how we can ignore. It would save counties, it would save taxpayers millions of dollars. I talked to a county commissioner last week who said that his particular county will spend $500,000 this year on indigent care. That would go away if we expand Medicaid for the poor South Dakotans. So we would save counties and taxpayers millions of dollars. We'll not only save our rural hospitals and clinics lots of money, we will possibly save some of them. It's that important. It's critical to the future of our rural hospitals and clinics. It'll put something like $300 million into the state's economy. Many times in some of our most rural areas where that kind of money will create higher wages, it'll create jobs, higher wages, all sorts of economic activity. It's a huge decision, probably I think the biggest public policy decision we face in South Dakota or have faced in the last 10 years. So I'm really encouraged. I know that there are legislators from both sides of the aisle working together, trying to draft some creative ways to find a way to expand Medicaid in a way that's responsible and meets maybe not everybody's concerns, but tries to address the concerns that we have both on the Democrat and Republican sides of the aisle. I think you're going to see some drafts, maybe even next week already, of some ideas that probably have some triggers, probably have some of the hopefully adopt some of the waiver language from other states. The legislature is kind of in the middle on this issue. Obviously, we can't negotiate directly with the federal government. That's really the responsibility of the executive branch, and we don't want to stick our nose in where we don't belong. But I think we all have a public interest when we have 48,000 neighbors out there. For the most part, these are people who are working in the workforce, in jobs, that sometimes two or three jobs, part-time jobs that don't pay health benefits and don't pay enough for them to go to the exchanges or to the marketplace to get health insurance. So a huge decision we have to make. It's a great opportunity. It's not going to happen easy. Change never happens easy. I was told a while back by an old pioneer of the REA days that it took like 4 or 5 votes in this legislature in South Dakota before we passed the REA. I guess rural people didn't need electricity. And rural water didn't come easy. The rural water folks could tell you stories about that. Change never comes easy, but change, when we work together, we can make good things happen for South Dakota. So I'm still confident we can do something on Medicaid this session. I think it's, as I said, the most critical public policy decision we face. With that, I want to turn it over to Senator Frerichs, and we'll be happy to take questions on Medicaid or any other subject.
Well, thank you to my friend, Representative Hunoff, who's the leader over there on the House side. My name is Jason Furicks. As he mentioned in his introduction, I hail from up in the northeast corner of the state, which if the wind hasn't blown everyone away, there still should be a few people left up there to take care of things and look forward to get back there this weekend. This week has been fairly enjoyable from my standpoint. We've continued to build on the theme, and the governor laid out his vision for this legislative session in his State of the State, which focused heavily on career and technical education. We got to see the student perspective of CTE, or career and tech education, this week with the legislative FFA breakfast, which the Future Farmers of America are an organization that's a 500,000 strong throughout the nation, and those young people came here to peer. Not so much with a strong issue in mind that they had to lobby us, but to tell their story on how career and tech education allows those young people to be successful in various leadership roles, but also fulfilling our workforce needs. And it was just a treat to have those district and state officers in our capital, and they were certainly welcomed by not only the governor in attending the breakfast, but also the various legislators who took the time to engage and work with those young people. Something that was very interesting yesterday morning during the House and Senate Agriculture Committees, the state winning team from Lenox presented an issue to the legislators, pro and con, on the issue of animal cloning. And yet, maybe a topic that we thought was behind us in the days of Dolly the sheep, which is a real topic now, where the health sciences side of human involvement is involved with the animal perspective to look at disease tracing and how we can perhaps overcome some of those serious challenges in the health side, working with livestock, which is very prominent here in South Dakota. So exciting, and for me, being a former FFA advisor, it was a lot of fun. Just a couple of other issues that have come up this week that we're working through and through on both sides of the aisle, and definitely with the governor's people, is finishing the implementation of the public safety bill that was passed last year, presented by the governor and legislative leaders, and obviously passed by the legislature. Just dealing with the fiscal side of things to make sure we have the correct fiscal note that attaches to any penalty increase on any legislation that will be presented. And so we've been meeting not only the last couple of days, but we will continue to refine those details and make sure that it's an equitable process for legislators and constituents that will present bills and ideas, but also so that the taxpayers will know the true cost of what that means to potential incarceration in the future with increased penalties. One other issue that is of significance, but yet is somewhat out of our reach as a legislature, but I do know that various parties have been involved, is on the skyrocketing price of propane that's out there. I've talked to now the Propane Marketers Association. They've been working with the governor and congressional staff. We certainly realize it's a free market issue, but I want to bring that to people's attention that it's a real issue. When you look at low-income families out there who scrape by just to have enough dollars, partnered with any fuel assistance monies that we get from a state and federal perspective just to heat their homes, this is real. And when you look at having been maybe $2 a gallon when we were drying corn this fall, and now being over $4 a gallon, it's a significant increase. And so that will have an effect, and it asks the bigger question of what we need to do out here in a rural state like South Dakota. We certainly have limits in terms of access to commerce in some instances, and so I think it asks all of us to look for ways to be more creative. Obviously, having more access to natural gas pipelines would be very helpful, but also ensuring that that we work hand in hand with the suppliers out there so that we can try to avoid situations like this where there happens to be a shortage. Again, I do know that the governor and the federal delegation are tuned into the issue, and they're working with extending mining hours and making sure we can haul the product. But it seems pretty ridiculous to have to truck in the propane from Kansas and further south just to get up here into South Dakota when all of us know that it's wintertime and we're going to need that propane to heat the homes and keep everybody safe and sound. With that, we certainly look forward to your questions. And we know we have folks in the room, and we welcome the media there, but also on the phone.
You want to go to the phones first?
Sure.
Okay, we're ready for questions. We'll take questions. Anybody on the phones?
Yeah, good morning. Kenny from KDLT is here.
Good morning.
I was just wondering, school boards, I saw a report that they were wanting even more funding, and I was wondering what the thoughts were if the 3.8% increase sounded feasible.
Well, you can't blame the school boards and teachers and parents and community leaders for wanting the legislature to try to address the problem that was has been long simmering in South Dakota. Our schools were underfunded before the 2010-2011 cycle, where we just drastically, the legislature, the governor's office, just really created a hole for the schools. They were already underfunded, and then we froze funding for a year, and we cut funding another year, 8.6%. Killed all sorts of programs related to technology and teacher training and things like that that provided some dollars. The federal government tries to step in and give $26 million to the states, to our state, recognizing that there was a problem. And here in South Dakota, the money stayed in Pierre and didn't get distributed to the school districts. So you certainly can understand that they want us to try to heal that problem, especially as we find now, and as many of us predicted, there's always been plenty of money. Every account in Pierre is flush with money. We've got something like $900 million in trust funds, a couple hundred million in reserve funds. Everywhere you look, everything's coming up roses dollars-wise, and the schools are really hurting. There seems to have been an effort at one time to shift the cost of education back onto the property taxpayers. And I think slowly I do sense that there's a realization that maybe that's not the way to go, and I see a bit of a turnaround. This year, the school district, or the state, was only obligated to do 1.6% increase to the schools. Already, the governor's budget is recommending almost double that at 3%. And I think we're looking for other ways, maybe even through the workforce development initiatives and other ways to try to provide other resources to the K-12 school districts. So I sense a turnaround. I sense a recognition now from people from both sides of the aisle that we created a problem that we've got to fix, and I think we've taken that step. But certainly I can understand the school districts wanting 3.8%. That was recommended by a bipartisan committee that met and studied the problem last summer, and I would personally support the 3.8%. I think if we'd have thought going into session that we were going to get 3%, I guess most people would have honestly been happy with that. Other questions or follow-ups?
Bernie, Jason, this is Jerry at WNAX. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, Jerry.
So what do you make of the resolution that was defeated in the Senate that, you know, basically said there's not a teacher shortage? I mean, that's kind of concurrent with this. If there's not a shortage, what is there to fix?
Well, it was very interesting. We had a couple of very good positive statements in support of the resolution that we had on the Senate floor, which passed out of the House, and yet there was no discussion at all from an opposing view, and that opposing view prevailed in the end. And so it was a little disappointing that here we are in this greatest example of democracy here in our state, and yet there wasn't anyone that rose to the top to want to speak from that opposing standpoint, which, yes, they would be opposing the issue that denying the fact that we have a shortage of teachers out there and access to quality teachers that are willing to take up the profession, and certainly recognizing the low wages that they are put up against. We are very much in terms of a border battle with the other states. The interstates run very close to our borders, And in that standpoint, that's where much of our population is located, and it's very easy for those teachers to want to jump the border and find better paying jobs over there and still continue in the teaching profession. We've lost a serious amount of teachers that have chosen to go back into the private sector. So it was surprising to us. Certainly it was just a resolution, but this resolution brought us to the bigger issue that exists out there that many of us know is still very real, and that's the simple fact that we do not have enough young people interested in wanting to pursue teaching as a profession and a career in the future. And I have spoken to our friends on the other side of the aisle, and we were a little bit surprised. It wasn't, you know, it shouldn't have been looked at as a partisan issue. It was brought forward in a bipartisan nature, and I think that they were a little surprised as well that no one did speak in opposition. But we'll move on, and we're kind of a big family out here, and it's growing pains, and that happened to be one of the first bills that surprised many of us.
Resolutions often cause more problems out here than actual statutes and bills that it would actually accomplish anything. So not my resolutions, but other resolutions. So I don't think legislators ourselves really put a lot of stock in resolutions. I think they're just kind of a necessary problem out here. Other questions? Go ahead. Obviously, I think we need the Arizona trigger, which basically says that if the federal government's support falls below the 90%, that we would stop the program and reevaluate it, something to that effect. And then there are triggers, I think best known as Iowa and Arkansas triggers, something to the effect that we would participate for the poorest folks up to 100% of poverty, and then for that group from 100 to 138% of poverty, that we would probably try to find some other creative way to help them get health care, maybe through the marketplace perhaps. So there are a couple different ideas out there, and I see very similar ideas. I've talked to Republican and Democratic legislators. I've seen very similar ideas being, you know, penciled around. So I'm confident that we're, you know, not going to be that far apart. And I appreciate truly that the governor, I don't sense has shut the door on this at all. I know the governor would agree that $300 million infusion of money into our economy would be huge. You know, clearly the governor is a compassionate man who cares about, you know, poor people, and he's concerned about workforce development. I think this is probably the biggest workforce development issue we face. So I'm confident that we can. I know that we will participate at some point in the future. I can't imagine why we wouldn't figure it out this year and move forward, providing health insurance to 48,000 folks, or at least a good share of those, and benefit from that $300 million infusion of revenue, which would then multiply, I think, many times across the state. That 160-to-1 return is pretty hard to argue with.
In our discussions with, as Representative Hunoff mentioned, our discussions with their friends on the other side of the aisle, there is that interest out there to look, especially at the Iowa option. I think all of us agree the Arizona trigger mechanism is a standard. That's what's going to be expected. Certainly we have members in our caucus who would just as soon see full implementation of Medicaid expansion. That's their priority, and that's what many of us agree. At the same time, we have many realists from a Democratic perspective who know that we have to start somewhere, and that's why we will continue to engage and work with our friends on the other side to, if at anything, at least use that Iowa model as a starting point and tailor an option that fits South Dakota. Obviously, we have to continue to work with the governor's office to have that communication with HHS and move the ball forward.
Other questions? Go ahead.
Nate? Nate with SDPB. Are there any bipartisan efforts right now when it comes to Medicaid? Is there any kind of topics or things like that that are bipartisan at this point in time?
Yeah, and that started last session very much so with a bipartisan group that conducted hearings that I think were very helpful. We had some really powerful hearings last session, and some folks, including some folks who are in that category, in that poverty area, hardworking folks. I remember one specific fellow who came from Aberdeen who works in healthcare, I believe it was in home healthcare, wasn't it? A fellow from Aberdeen who does important work for low wages, hard work, work that many of us wouldn't do for any wage, and yet had no health care himself. And I think he made a big impact on the committee and other people like him. So that bipartisanship started last session. It's continued this session. And, I don't think anybody cares on either side of the aisle, whether it's a Republican bill or a Democrat bill or a governor's bill. Let's just find something that we can all agree on and take advantage of this opportunity.
Further questions out there? Yes, Cassie.
Yesterday in the Senate, those Common Core bills passed, the 63 and 64, and then 62 failed. But how do you expect those to go in the House? I guess was kind of some of the talking here about those.
I can tell just a little bit, and then certainly Representative Hunoff will address more from the House perspective. The Common Core issue is something that has festered over this last summer, and an issue that is not real for us, or not new, I should say, but is an issue that's being discussed. At the same time, our effect as a legislature is fairly minimal as far as the next steps in terms of Common Core. That's something that the Department of Education has, they follow their procedure to roll it out as something working with a multi-state perspective, and here we are. The bills that passed, one of them which has bipartisan support, I don't think there's been a no vote on it yet. They say, to my knowledge, it has wide support and is on the privacy side of things. That bill, I don't remember the exact number, but that one basically says the student records should be kept private and that data should not be shared from a federal perspective. Now, the amendment that was passed yesterday, which is is probably only one part of the equation, but the amendment that we put on there dealt with the impact aid, and so we'll see federal impact aid come in, and in that case, there may need to be some student data information from a more broad perspective shared to maintain the impact aid. But we also had Senator Larry Lucas had an amendment that said, let's just make it blanket in terms of any federal funding. We wouldn't want to shortchange ourselves here in South Dakota. And so we feel from our perspective that it needs to, that bill needs to be refined further and make sure that all of the questions are asked and that we find the true details. To our knowledge in discussions at this point, especially those folks from Department of Education, they aren't as concerned that the bill would hamstring any ability in terms of federal funding, but we want to be absolutely sure because, as I said a week ago, and that's the case as we move forward, when it comes to federal money, we really enjoy it and put it to work here in South Dakota and maximize that use. And so in terms of education, we wouldn't want to shortchange ourselves, which most directly would have an effect on local school districts. The bill that was defeated put in place or would have put in place a basically a task force or large gathering to re-examine Common Core, had a funding mechanism which required the two-thirds and went down basically from the standpoint that we felt it was not needed at this point. Anytime there are new standards put in place for education, there is already a set of protocols and procedures, and that's the other bill that was passed, basically puts a two-year moratorium on any further implementation of multi-state standards and tightens up the hearing process for any new standards that could be rolled out even from a state perspective. So we have to continue to work with our Board of Education. They are appointed and approved by the Senate, or appointed by the governor, approved by the Senate, and that's their specialty, is to set the standards for education.
Yeah, there's been a lot of heated rhetoric about Common Core before the session started, and I think a lot of us thought we'd be facing a lot of legislation that just wanted to stop it dead in its tracks or do the same thing through some sleight of hand, things throwing lots of roadblocks out. So far, we're not seeing that. I commend the folks who have concerns, and we all have concerns about Common Core. I don't know if anybody just absolutely loves everything about Common Core. But the folks who have been the most vocal opponents, I think, have done a very reasonable job of laying out concerns and having good discussions out here. And I think the bills that came out of the Senate look pretty reasonable. And I think efforts that seek to measure the standards' successes down the road and have public hearings and transparency and privacy, I think all those kind of things are very reasonable I wouldn't even call them restrictions, reasonable things that we could probably find some agreement on. So I think it's been a good discussion. The Common Core, I think we all share an issue that we want teachers to have the freedom to teach. And one of the great things about America is that we have 50 states and we have thousands, I don't know how many, tens of thousands of school districts and cities and towns, and everybody kind of goes out there and does their own thing. And that's what makes America great, all that experimentation. And my concern about Common Core is that we lessen that experimentation if we standardize too much, create too much uniformity. We take away the ability of teachers to be creative and figure out new and better ways to do things. I saw the handbook at a local school district on what it takes to comply with Common Core. It's about 2 or 3 inches thick. And you talk about something that would discourage young people from going into teaching, it'll be that handbook, more even than low wages. So we've all got concerns, and I think I was not looking forward to the Common Core debate at first, but I think the opponents have been very responsible about bringing bills that really do deserve debate, and I suspect I'll probably support some of them.
Nate with SDPB. Christy Nome was here this week and spoke to both chambers. She spoke of course, about the farm bill, but another part that was really kind of hit home for South Dakota was sex trafficking. What kind of discussions are going on right now in both the Senate and the House regarding sex trafficking, and is there any bills that we could see on the way?
You know, it sure was a treat for us to have our congresswoman take the time. She's been pretty regular about feeling welcome back in a capital that many of us served with her at the same time when she was in the legislature. I definitely appreciate her message, and the focus on the farm bill is great news for South Dakota. It's long overdue. I think we've reached a point where we have a little bit of fatigue that we think, is this farm bill ever going to get done? Is it ever going to go away as far as a topic of discussion? Are they going to implement it? So it's been great to watch there. I would say, though, and it still deals more on the federal perspective, but has an effect in South Dakota, the country of origin labeling is still in flux a little bit, and that's something that I know the ranchers and farmers groups out there are continually being engaged on that issue, because Congresswoman Nome has an important role to play to look out for those interests of our producers who ask for and expect that country of origin labeling will continue to be the law of the land, so that we can assure our consumers of a very safe product. On the sex trafficking issue, that's something that does transcend political boundaries and is something that all of us are certainly aware of the problems that exist, but at the same time, we're open for any suggestions to continue to tighten up the problems that exist there. As Congresswoman Nome cited, it's not something that's just in Sioux Falls. It's not something that just happens during the Sturgis bike rally. It's an issue in terms of pheasant season. It's an issue that happens across the state. And so I know I just was presented earlier with a few bills that have come forward a little bit on the civil penalty side of things, so that way those that have been trapped in the sex trafficking, that they have the ability to exercise some civil rights against the individual that's in charge of them, and then at the same time maybe giving some potential immunity for charges that may be on that obviously in most cases is a young woman, but a young individual who's affected. I'm sure there's other issues, other ideas out there, but that's what I've heard so far.
That's an issue we've dealt with some out here in the past, and I've not seen any legislation yet this year. I heard there could be something coming, but I've not seen any bill.
I've only heard talk about possibility, but yeah.
Thank you.
Other questions? Thank you very much. We'll see you next week.
Thank you.